This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. This year on Earth Day, thousands of people all over the United States and world will march in support of science, the importance of funding scientific research and understanding scientific data. Ahead of Earth Day, the World Watch Institute has released a new book and project called Earth Ed, Rethinking Education on a Changing Planet. Our children are being left a planet ravaged by industrialization, and yet we've not adequately prepared them to meet the challenges of climate change. Earth Ed hopes to change that by suggesting a new way of designing educational curricula and training teachers. My guest is Eric Asadorian. He is the project director of Earth Ed and a senior fellow with the World Watch Institute. Welcome to the program, Eric.
Thank you, Sonali. It's great to be here.
So first, you know, it should go without saying that an acceptance that science is a real thing, that scientific data ought to be respected and the scientific method applied rigorously goes hand in hand with an understanding that we live in a planet with a changing climate. Sadly, because of politics today, that is not something that's accepted. And sadly, climate change within schools has taken on the controversy that we see with similar to things like teaching evolution in schools or talking about abortion in schools, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually somewhat sad. My five-year-old son knows more about climate change than my 13-year-old niece, right? And that's because even though she's in a blue state, her science teacher refuses to talk about climate change. He doesn't believe in it, which is something very strange to fathom for a science teacher.
And your five-year-old knows more about it, presumably because he hears his father talk about it on a regular basis.
He does. He hears me a lot, but I mean, it's not just me. It's everything from Magic School Bus to NPR, which he probably listens to too much of. I mean, just the amount. and so, yeah, he's hearing it and absorbing it all the time through his cultural context.
And when you refer to Magic School Bus for the non-parents, this is a TV program that is very much exploring science and the importance of science and learning about the world around us. And we certainly don't have enough of those programs. It's kind of an old program, actually, isn't it?
Well, I found that a lot of 70s and 80s television is probably the best that we can find. And it's mostly, I actually read more Magic School Bus books than the video. But yeah, I mean, it is interesting that the pacing and the information shared was much more conducive to education 20 to 30 years ago.
How poorly set up are our schools today, here in the United States in particular, to address climate change? You know, it's because it's a new phenomenon that's really something we have to deal with in the last 20 or 30 years. It shouldn't surprise us too much that it's not an accepted part of the curriculum everywhere. But how big a void is there on the issue of climate science and understanding the changing climate in public schools in the U.S.?
Well, I'd maybe take a step back, just asking this question of how big of a void is there on all sustainability issues, on all, now a whole new category that we talk about a lot in the report, on resilience, right? If we really understand climate change, we also have to accept that it's too late to stop climate change in that theoretical sense of keeping everything as is, right? There are certain pathways now locked into the future, the collapse of the Western Antarctic, you know, certain droughts, and you know, we have at least 2 degrees of climate change locked in. So there are going to be massive disruptions. So the idea of only talking about sustainability in schools is no longer even enough, right? We need to recognize that children are going to be living through a turbulent century. And one that we're making even more turbulent. I realized recently that my five-year-old, when he's my age, 40, there will be 9.6 billion people on the planet, right, which is going to put a whole new set of pressures on the Earth. So, yes, climate change needs to be talked about, but really sustainability should be the core philosophy underpinning all of education.
And of course, a big part of that is understanding how the world works and infusing scientific education into our schools, translating that into applications in the earth. Doesn't that also include simply exposing children to nature?
Absolutely. So one of the opening chapters, the second chapter in the book, is actually written by a nature preschool expert, David Sobel, who's written for decades on this topic and looks at the role of forest schools or nature preschools. And it's a budding trend in the U.S. I mean, U.S. is always fascinating because it has the best of and the worst of in case studies, right? It has really innovative education going on and really surprisingly backwards education going on. But, things like forest schools are pretty common in other parts of the world. In Scandinavia, in Germany, there are over 1,000 forest schools. And a forest school specifically is typically a preschool targeting 4 to 6 year old children so that their first 2 years are not in a classroom, but they're out in the woods without even a building, in the rain and shine and snow, just playing for the school day, right? And often playing by themselves with not even in the eyesight of the teacher, right? So they're playing with fire, they're climbing trees, things that we as overprotective parents now see as scary and maybe no longer useful. But the research shows that they are more connected to nature, they're more environmentally minded, but also benefits like they have higher executive functioning, right? More self-control as children, more confidence, right? So there is a real value in getting children out in nature and giving them the freedom to develop through play, particularly.
So it's not just about talking about the science of climate change in the classroom and talking about solutions to stopping global warming in the classroom. It's actually about also adapting to a changing climate. Part of that, of course, is children learning sustainability as a real practice, almost as a lifestyle aspect, right? Talk about the issue of food in particular and how important it is for children to understand where their food comes from and even learn how to grow their own food and why that is important to living on a changing planet.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, food is is a perfect medium, right? It's everybody eats, obviously, and there's an opportunity and a risk of with food, right? If we ignore food, if we preach how we want sustainable agriculture and talk about mistreatment of animals or whatever in the classroom, but then there's factory farm beef and packaged food all served on disposable styrofoam trays, there's a real cognitive dissonance there. But when you actually have what's going on in the cafeteria, reinforcing the curriculum in the schools, reinforcing the after-school gardening programs or whatever extracurriculars you're adding on there, that really helps to create a sustainability-centric curriculum, and it becomes really powerful.
And are children more likely who have exposure through their schools to gardening and growing their own food, are they more likely to grow up to be gardeners and to supplement their own food with homegrown produce as well?
That's a great question. I think there are clear studies that show if a child grows food, they are more likely to eat it, which is a first huge step, right? I mean, lots of kids don't like their vegetables, but if they actually grow the broccoli or they grow a pizza, tomatoes and grain and all that, they have a much deeper understanding of food. And that's the foundational building block, I think, to a lifetime of nutritional knowledge, right? And I would argue, and we do in the report a little bit, and I have in other projects, that if we really look honestly at what climate change is bringing and this changing planet is bringing, the consumer era will start to wind down, either gently because of smart strategic planning or disruptively because of massive shifts in climate. And so many more people in the future will once again be pulling more of their calories from at least supplementing their calories from sufficiency gardening and yard farming, in a sense.
You have a chapter in the book Earth Ed entitled Education for the Eighth Fire, Indigeneity and Native Ways of Learning. I thought this was really powerful and important because a lot of indigenous communities historically had figured out how to live symbiotically with the earth, with their environment. And so there's certainly so much to be learned from those practices. Is there a, you know, how can those be infused into our educational curriculums?
Yeah, there's many ways. I mean, I think that chapter is powerful in three ways. One, yes, it's teaching the indigenous skills and wisdom, talking about integrating that into the curriculum. Two, it's in extending an invitation for not just indigenous people, but all people to learn their indigeneity, right? To be invited back to incorporating and learning about those skills. But three, this eighth fire is referring to kind of this transition that we're going through now. And the author, Melissa Nelson, makes a really important point, which is that indigenous people have lived through the dystopia that we are fearing, that we are going to soon live through. The displacements, the epidemics, the conflict that we fear is going to come from climate change, they have already had several centuries of experience living through. And they can, you know, serve as guides, in a sense, through how to live through that tumult. So on all three of those aspects, it's a really powerful chapter. And yes, there is really great efforts to, you know, by the indigenous communities to teach these skills, by groups like every year I join this training called the Mid-Atlantic Primitive Skills Meet, where all these instructors from around the north east and the southeast come to the Mid-Atlantic area and teach everything from making fire to processing acorns. My son and I this fall work together to process acorn meal and make, you know, great food out of it, breads, muffins. And that knowledge is important now as a kind of a lost art, but also I think it's, again, like gardening, is going to make children more resilient. If they have those skills of how to process or turn acorns, which are inedible in their raw form, into a food source, and a very healthy food source at that, they're going to be a lot better off in a transition where there is not enough food in the grocery stores to make it through some of this bottleneck that we'll go through.
Now, we talked about resiliency. What about mental resiliency? It's very easy to become kind of hopeless when we look at climate science. I mean, every week, every month, there is a new set of data pointing to, you know, the fact that our planet warming is inevitable and that we just aren't taking enough corrective measures. And when we think about how we educate children about this, it's scary to explain to them that we are destroying the planet that they will grow up on. How do you address that within an educational curriculum, within a school environment, and why is it important?
Well, it's important because we are going to go through that difficult challenge no matter what. So to not address it, as is often the case today, leaves them suddenly surprised by the events unfolding, and subject to reactionary responses. And so this question of how do we frame it is a key question, right? So there is one of the key goals of the report was to really extend what sustainability education includes, right? So it's not just a book about systems thinking and nature preschools. It includes a chapter on character education. How do we make strong moral leaders so that they can help guide us through this challenging time? A chapter on social emotional learning. As we go through these challenges, conflict will increase inevitably. And yet, how do we respond to that conflict? How do we respond in a positive way, in a healthy way? So there is already a deep body of literature on these topics, but not so much applied to ecological change. And so the niche, I think, that we were trying to fill is how do we apply all this wisdom toward toward the changing planet that children are growing up on and learning in, so should be preparing for.
Now, let's also talk about what you hope this, I mean, there's so much to discuss. We could talk for hours. So you've got the project that you're launching, the book, Earth Ed, Rethinking Education on a Changing Planet. How do you get it into the hands of educators? How do you use it to influence schools, to influence the ways of teaching from teachers and administrators, and even parents who want to see their schools start to adopt some of these practices?
Sure. Well, it's a great question. And I mean, one of WorldWatch's strengths, I would say, is that we write for a general audience, right? So these chapters are short. They have lots of great case studies of schools that are integrating forest education directly into their public school or systems thinking or social emotional learning. And so that it is readable and accessible. We have 63 authors contributed to the volume this year in either chapter form or short boxes. So working through their networks, of course, is helpful in getting that word out. I'm actually talking to you from Appalachian State University, a strong sustainability educator and a partner in launching the report this year, where we'll live stream the event and also talk with the student body and professors here at App State. So we're certainly using as many communications tools as possible to get the word out.
And where can people find out about it online? Can the book be ordered? Is it available in bookstores?
Yeah, absolutely available in bookstores, online. If you go to earthed.info, you can take a sneak peek at the opening chapter. I think, and as well, the final chapter, which tries to look at a vision of where Earth Ed could go. How could, if we actually apply some of these lessons today, what could education look like in 2030? Would it be getting us much closer to the resiliency and sustainability that the world would need? So yeah, there's a way to take a glance at online, as well as order the whole report.
So for the teachers and parents among the audience and just people interested in education in general, earthed.info, earthed.info is the website. We'll post a link to that from our website later today. Eric, good luck with the book and the project.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest is Eric Asadorian. He is the project director of EarthEd and a senior fellow with the World Watch Institute. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.